Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence. I'm here with you today. I don't have somebody to interview, and I realized that this was probably Reiki's way of saying that it was me that needed to come and speak to you today. As some of you know from my Facebook page, March is my graduation month from chemo and radiation in 2010, and this is what they call the fourth year of recovery, and I went in and had some tests done, and my mammogram came back fine, my blood tests came back fine, but in the last months leading up to this, I have been having a funny leg thing. And it turns out that I have a metastasis of my breast cancer, and it's now in my bones. And so I have a lesion on the very top of my right femur, my big bone in my leg, and also a little spot on my clavicle, my left clavicle, and perhaps a spot in my left lung. So I was going off to England and then Belgium and back to England again for a month this April and the beginning of May. And so I hurried up and had lots of tests and so on to determine whether or not this was in fact a metastasis of my breast cancer. And it was. So I have really had such a different viewpoint of cancer now after my last bout, and also after just living with this particular, what I call cancer brain, which means that anything and everything that seems to be not right in my body has been, I've always thought in the last few years, oh, I wonder if that's cancer. Oh, I wonder if that's cancer. Oh, I wonder if that's cancer. So sort of in an offhand way, I talked to my oncologist about my leg in March and said, well, you know, I think it might be bone cancer. And she said, well, I don't think so. And I said, well, let's, test it out and see. And sure enough, it was. So that's kind of the good news and bad news. And I felt like I was in touch with my body. But at the same time, of course, I didn't want it to be cancer. I feel great. I have good energy. My head is getting clearer and clearer. And so it's kind of a funny thing to hold both together. So before I left for England, my oncologist gave me my hormone therapy, which I've been taking, and it just seems as though this is the right time to do it. I know this seems really crazy, but in 2010, when I was finished with my chemo and radiation treatment, I felt terrible physically and mentally and emotionally. I was very weak. And when I took the hormone therapy, immediately it caused me to not sleep. I had so many aches in my body that I just couldn't stand it. And it really depressed me. So I thought, I can't take this medication. And not only that, it was $560 a month, and I was supposed to take it for 5 years. So I just couldn't face the possibility of paying a pharmaceutical company that much money. So I decided not to take it, and I've been on a naturopathic regime ever since, which has been, I consider it to be very successful, because I not only detoxed from my other therapies, I gained strength, my body feels much more stable, if not healthy, whatever that means, and at the same time, I felt like I was taking care of the possibility of the reoccurrence of breast cancer. So when I found out that the tests were all coming back positive, as it were, I realized that this was a clear message for my body. And it was about walking, standing on my own two feet, and also knowing that I was whole within myself. And in order to really feel that wholeness, what I needed to do and what I feel like I need to do is to go back into therapy. So what I'm going to do this time is I found a therapist in Tucson who does something called the Grief Recovery Handbook, which is a publication by two men whose names I can't remember right now, but you can Google it on the web, and it leads you through a process, weekly process, usually run by a therapist, to get in touch with the things that you could grieve about, and not necessarily people who are close to you who have died, but it's possible. You can also have what they call a broken heart from a very painful divorce situation, from a loss in your life. And I realize that I have so many of those kinds of losses in my life right now, especially when I was a child, that I need to go back, and I want to really heal my childhood, and this is the way I want to do it. So I'm excited. When I come back in May to the United States, I will start my therapeutic sessions, and this will accompany me through my physical therapy with my oncologist and naturopath. I wrote a letter to people. I sent it out to many, many different email lists that I have, and some of you have already received this letter, and some of you have not, so I wanted to put it out on the radio show and just let you know that I'm doing well. I'm still feeling great. I still have good mental capacities. The lucky thing is I have very little side effect from the hormone therapy. I believe that that's partly supported by the Reiki treatments I've been getting from all over the world. Thank you very much. And also because I'm in such a good space. I'm in a good physical condition. I'm in a good mental condition. I'm in a good emotional condition. So now is the time for me to do some really deep work and also to take the hormone therapy and not have so many side effects. And interestingly enough, now it costs, because it went generic, this hormone therapy now costs $15 a month. Can you believe that? So I waited, I think, for the right time to start this therapy, and am looking forward to another definitely in-depth look at who I am and how I'm made up and what my next step of healing is. So in my letter, what I did was I asked people to just communicate with me things that they thought would be good for me, things that I might connect with in my process of healing. And I've gotten wonderful, wonderful emails and Facebook entries and phone calls from people. And it's been really interesting. I made a new file in my emails for all these responses, so I can go back and look at them and read them. And when it's the right time for me, then the therapy that will connect with me will do so. And also, just some of the lovely stories and reminiscing and reflecting that people have offered me, not just about myself, but about their families or their experience with cancer. It's been fascinating, very inspiring. And all of this, including my own attitude toward what's happening right now in my life, reminds me of this, and has been probably influenced by this article that I received from a Reiki master in Buenos Aires, Argentina, when I was down there in last October. And we were talking about this workshop that I was doing for Reiki students, a one-day workshop called Healing or Curing, or Both. And she gave me this article, In the Service of Life, by Rachel Raymond, R-E-M-E-N. And evidently, Rachel Raymond has written a lot of articles about philosophic and emotional clarity around the healing and curing process. A lot of people who are putting together integrative medical programs in hospitals and hospices use her writings as guidance, and I can totally understand why. This is a fairly short article, and what it does is it outlines the difference between helping, fixing, and serving. And it has really touched me, and I feel that when I first was diagnosed with cancer in 2009, I got a lot of helping and a lot of fixing emails, which was really interesting because probably I felt weaker and probably I felt pretty broken at the time. And people were responding to me in that way. And I'll just sort of paraphrase some of what she says about helping and fixing. Helping is based on inequality. It is not a relationship between equals. When you help, you use your own strength to help those of lesser strength. If I'm attentive to what's going on inside of me when I'm helping, I find that I am always helping someone who is not as strong as I am, who is needier than I am. And people feel this inequality. And when we help, we may inadvertently, or without meaning to, take away from people more than we could ever give them. We might take away some of their self-esteem, their sense of worth and integrity and wholeness. And when I help from my strength. So it's like giving up a part of myself. And I just recognize this in my own teaching, like when I come across somebody who I feel really needs my help, you know, really needs to have somebody there who I can be the strong one. And I see that when people try to help me in this particular definition, it doesn't really support me in becoming the whole person I am. So now I feel that my attitude comes from my bone cancer, in reference to my bone cancer, comes from a place that I feel much more whole than I did 4 years ago. And so I'm not asking help from a weaker place. I'm asking for something else. I'm also not asking to be fixed, because in fixing, and I'm quoting, I'm paraphrasing Rachel Raymond again, in fixing, there is an inequality of expertise that can easily become a moral distance. We cannot serve at a distance. We can serve only that which is profoundly connected and that we are willing to touch, like Reiki. So fixing is an experience of mastery and expertise. So the fixer has an illusion of being casual. In other words, a fixer uses their expertise to fix something that's broken. However, if we can imagine that as human beings we're not broken, then the fixer has to move to another level, which is service. And the helper has to move to another level, which is service. So when we serve, we are, let's see, how can I say this and paraphrase Rachel? Okay, start again. Service rests on the basic premise that the nature of life is sacred and that life is a holy mystery with an unknown purpose. When we serve, we know that we belong to life and to that purpose. So when I come from a place of wholeness and really knowing that I have no idea how long I'm going to live, and I have no idea what really the purpose of this cancer is, then I come from a place where people can serve me and I can serve life and we all serve together. And that's what I feel like is happening in the emails and the communication that I'm getting right now, is that people are coming with me in this experience of being in the service of something greater, being willing to acknowledge that essentially there's something that's very unknown, and a willingness to be in service to this, but also the willingness to not know. And I think this is really fabulous. Another thing that I'm doing these days, which I just got finished doing, having this event in Belgium called Reiki for a Better World, is another way that I'm living this particular service piece. Around the time when I first was diagnosed with breast cancer, this property came up in Arizona that I've been using for retreats called Kenyon Ranch, and it was for sale. And, you know, at the time when I first started my treatments back then, I just told them, well, it's too bad. I would love for you to buy it, but I think you should sell it and not worry about me because I just don't have the energy to do anything. But what happened is that it felt like this ranch was opened and that Reiki answered this by creating an understanding of a calling for people in what is called the OGM retreat, which is a retreat for people from the system that I practice that happens at the end of the summer every year for the last 5 years. And 3 years ago, this group of people had the experience, everyone there had the experience of Reiki calling them to something called Reiki Home. And this has become not really a place, as in, you know, a physical place, but it has become a calling to a different state of consciousness. It's become a willingness to serve this unknown, this calling that where the goal is unknown and where it's full of mystery and full of surrender. And it's not about fixing anything. It's not about helping anything. It's about creating a place and creating a state of consciousness where we as Reiki students and our Reiki community can be of true, what I call true service, which means that it doesn't come from fixing and it doesn't come from helping. It comes from service. So I had a very interesting day yesterday. I had a meeting with a new master candidate of mine, who comes from India, and he's a man, I don't know how old he is, maybe he's 45 or 50 or something like that. And it was very interesting to be able to talk to him, because I've never had the opportunity to really talk to someone from India and from that culture who grapples with the same questions about service, about poverty, about karma, about destiny, about unknown, about surrender, and about money. You know, that all comes together. It just feels like that India, for me anyway, is this place where all this where all these threads of understanding come together. For instance, you know, as everyone knows, and I will just say it for myself, one of the things that is true for me is that I've never been drawn to go to India. And when I decided in the mid-1990s that I might visit India, it was really for not a very good motivation. So I ended up not going, and it was really wonderful that I didn't go, because it would have been a very interesting and not very beneficial trip for anybody, I think. And what I realized is that I was going, my motivation was, number one, to find out what the draw was for other people, what the draw of India was for other people. That's how I want to say it. And the other part was, I wanted to observe the ashrams in Pune and the ashrams in for Guru Mai, to be able to understand the people who were my students, who were devotees of Guru Mai or devotees of Bhagwan Rajneesh. So, I mean, it just wasn't good motivation. And so I'm glad I didn't go. And but I've always been, in a personal way, I didn't know what I would do if I saw the mix in India, all these people who are on the streets, who are begging, who are what they call untouchables, and all the different strata of the culture there. And I realize now, of course, that it was more about my being uncomfortable with myself rather than the culture there. So obviously, when people are comfortable or have some quality within themselves, they're able to go there and to have the landscape and the peoplescape of India touch them profoundly. So masters have gone over there, and I know that they've gone over there with an idea of helping. You know, they come from a Western society. They, I've heard them say this, that they want to provide something for these poor people in India where they could help themselves and, you know, give them an arm up and so on. And, you know, that's, it's not a bad motivation, but it's something that always leaves me with a question. And then there is this other place where, you know, the caste system of India is not right, politically not right, humanitarianly not right, and as a Westerner, I want to go in and fix it, so I will initiate people in Reiki, and that will bring about a change in the culture that is about fixing it. So with my expertise in Reiki, I'm willing to go and fix the culture, and I also think that's not a very beneficial kind of motivation. And, you know, I've always had this big question mark about Mother Teresa. And when she was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize several years ago, I talked to many people about their experience of Mother Teresa. And in this article of Rachel Raymond's, she says that Mother Teresa's basic message is that we serve life not because it is broken, but because it is holy. We serve life not because it is broken, but because it's holy. And when she serves others, she is serving the wholeness and the mystery of this life. And I realize that that's exactly what Reiki has taught me, that my life is holy. And the tension between my understanding of my life now in my adult self and my life as a child, has the tension is so great right now that it really needs to be resolved and reconciled. And I want to take all the pain and all the wounds and all the disillusionment of my childhood and allow that energy to be released to serve this other part of me, which is the part that wants to serve. And I don't feel like I can go into service without taking care of this piece, because if I don't take care of that piece that needs to be fixed and that piece that needs to be helped, then I will continue having this underlying energy of fixing and helping, which will not be intrinsically beneficial to the people that I really want to serve. And Rachel Raymond says that only service heals, and I believe that. And I see that in the stories of people on the radio show, in my life on the road, where I hear people say to me, well, you know, I met this person and I gave them Reiki because they just so needed it. And, you know, 2 months later, I get this email back saying that their cancer is gone, or their asthma has been relieved, or whatever the outcome is. It just feels as though there's this theme of service runs through these stories. And I'm not saying that Reiki is the healing of Reiki is and the curing of Reiki is dependent on whether your motivation is helping, fixing, or service. I'm just saying that as a community and as a Reiki practitioner, we could all be more mindful of being congruent. Because for me, what is happening is that Reiki is preparing me to serve. Because Reiki gives me this experience of life being a sacred, a wholeness, and a mystery. And that I can't determine somebody else's life, but I am willing to serve it. And this is my basic premise for my own healing right now, is that I want to serve my life. And it doesn't matter how long that life will be. It could be, you know, 5 months, it could be 5 years, it could be 10 years, it could be longer than that. I have no idea. And the interesting thing is that I'm not really attached to how long it is. What I am attached to somewhat is the quality of that life and what I'm willing to do in order to have that quality. So the things that have been sent to me, one of the reoccurring things that I'm seeing that's kind of new on the horizon of treatment of cancer, and I would assume other physical maladies, is that, you know, medical science, and I really appreciate the research and the development that has allowed this to happen, that medical science has been able to become more and more and more individualized to the actual condition, not to the person particularly, but to the condition. So there is ways, I understand, where radiation, for instance, can be focused and used in a way that will actually strengthen my bone so that I don't have a danger of compound fractures and so on, which will really be a bummer because then I can't walk. But it can also really be articulated so that it addresses the actual kind of cancer I have, which is just kind of a mind-blowing situation. The other thing that is happening in Germany and in another way in the United States and in another way in Mexico, according to the emails that I've received lately, and most likely from lots of other places, is that scientists are being able to take people's blood and reduce it and investigate DNA and the cellular structure of my blood, and then actually create an individual remedy specifically for me and specifically for my cancer. But it's like medical science is individuating the actual condition, and this, which comes out of the holistic health approach, individuates to the individual body itself. So I'm fascinated by this particular developments, and am really excited about studying them with the help of some people who can actually read this stuff and make sense of it, because I really have a difficult time with that. And you know, be able, if I need to partake of some of these and to find out if this is really another way. The other thing, of course, is to really look at my willingness to be treated by Reiki and to know that whatever happens with my Reiki treatments, that's part of the mystery. That's part of my surrender. And that's part of my willingness to serve the wholeness of my life. And what does it mean? So the questions that I'm working with now are, what does it mean to hold my life? Like, I just picture my hand with my palm up, you know, relaxed and comfortably holding my life light in my hand, very much like in India when you see the dancers holding a little candle in their hands. And to be able to hold this, allow it to be imbued with Reiki, and allow it to burn for as long as it needs to. And I go back to the very basic teaching of Reiki, which is, have no expectation. Let Reiki be the teacher. Apply Reiki and see what happens. And that's where I am. I want to hold this light of my life without expectation, with as much Reiki as I can soak in, and as much Reiki as I can use to find the people and find the things that will benefit me. And to be able to surrender to Reiki, so that I know that I'm being called and I'm following my calling. My calling is not to live to 90. My calling is to live my life with Reiki as far as I go. The other thing that Reiki is doing for me and has done for me all these years has been to prepare me for death. Because death is our next ultimate kind of essential transition. is the time when all of what we've learned in our life, all of who we are, and all of who we want to be, all come together in a single moment. And as I said before, it is my wish that I open my arms to this moment and that I embrace this moment, knowing that I've lived life to the fullest. I've allowed people to touch me. And I've touched others. This is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki, balancing form and essence.